Welcome to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast, where we interview founders, leaders, and experts of an industry that will, in a few years, affect the lives of us all. My name is Stella, and I'm your host for this episode. Today, I will be talking with Leon Zygmunt. Leon is a digital nomad and a true Bitcoiner who has been leading several initiatives aiming to support the Bitcoin revolution. In this episode, Leon and I will discuss about what sets Bitcoin apart from all other financial assets. He will also give us some fascinating insights about the perks of being a digital nomad using Bitcoin all around the world, and as you will see, he's very convincing about visiting El Salvador. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hi, Leon. Thank you very much for being here. It's a pleasure for me to have you on the podcast. How are you?
Hi, Stella. Thank you very much for having me on. Looking forward to your questions.
Yes. So the first question, obviously, is could you please introduce yourself to our auditors?
I am the chief pleb motivator of BitcoinNews.com, a new fresh news platform dedicated to towards the cause of Bitcoin. And our service that we are looking to build is to be the voice of the plebs and just covering and observing the whole Bitcoin ecosystem and the Bitcoin movement. How Bitcoin is slowly but surely outclassing and outcompeting other currencies around the world.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. Can you please tell us how did you get into crypto?
Yes, of course. That's the best question, of course, because you always get interesting answers such as, you know, I had 10,000 Bitcoins once on my hard drive. I mean, first of all, I'm not into crypto at all. I am actually only into Bitcoin. And I really like to separate these two. It's two different, very different things. And I think my background really is, you know, I'm a very curious person. I always like to ask the difficult questions to my teachers. And I was always wondering, you know, what's wrong with the world? And I couldn't really find the answers because, yeah, you know, if you're not, you know, deeply down the rabbit hole, then all the information you have is, you know, your parents, maybe your teachers, and maybe the media, right? Or like the newspaper or the TV. And so I'm sitting there, you know, a young guy, and I'm like, I'm not satisfied with these answers. They're not consistent. They don't add up. The ideas or the conclusions don't make sense. So something is still wrong, and I can't really figure it out. And then at some point, I got introduced I'm getting introduced to a very new concept about economics that I never heard before. And so this is the Austrian School of Economics, which is a very particular school of thought from Vienna. So that's why Austria. And the most famous thinkers of this school of thought are, for example, Ludwig von Mises and Friedrich August von Hayek or Murray Rothbard. And so I'm there studying these things by my own and realizing, wow, this makes more sense. This really feels good. This seems so much more consistent. And up until this date, I have not found anything as, you know, coherent and consistent to explain certain issues we have. For instance, you know, the current economic model we are all on the entire planet, basically, there's no exception, almost no exception. People trying to fix problems caused by printing money by printing more money, right? And so I believe that is not a good idea. That doesn't really work out. And that's how I then that was the beginning, that was the intellectual foundation that made me understand Bitcoin really well. Okay. and the reason why Bitcoin is important. Yeah.
Okay. And so when did you discover Bitcoin?
That was around the time when I had my first little startup experience trying to grow a company in Berlin with juices. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. didn't work out successfully in the end. But at that time around, I was following Bitcoin. And around 2015, then I decided to really focus on Bitcoin. And because I just knew, okay, this is something that interests me. I believe it's a growing industry soon. And let's just figure out what kind of business or opportunity there might be for me, right? And of course, I think the more important thing is to learn about it first. And it's so much to learn that, you know, that's already quite a job. Mm-hmm. And a little bit before, I was already, you know, being told about it and really dismissed it, I think around 2012, somebody sent me an article and I'm just, you know, not capable of understanding anything. I was like, wow, this is a long article. What is this about? Don't really understand anything. I'm not, you know, my background is not super technical. It did kind of interest me, but I was just not on the level, you know, and also had other problems to solve in my life. So, you know, when you don't have the time, when you have other issues, you will just say, oh, okay, maybe at the later point, right now it's not the time. And that's unfortunate, you know, but you learn. And then thankfully I got a good mentor and some other people telling me, hey, you should look at this, Leon, you know, because you are the guy that is so dedicated to the money problem, right? And you really want to have better money. Well, maybe Bitcoin could be that one, right? So you should try and research it more, and that helped. So I finally got the time to learn about it, actually more from personal mentorship, just asking questions, right? So everyone is there like, I don't understand it, can someone help me? And so when you're lucky, someone has the patience and the time to really help you understand it. Mm-hmm. And then from there on you can walk on your own, basically.
I see. Yeah, it's very interesting. And I guess that back then in 2015 there were not so many resources as we have now, because right now the web is literally full of information about crypto, about Bitcoin, about how to invest and this and that. But I guess back then it wasn't really the case. I find it
It was already better. It was much better than, let's say, 2012 or 2010. But yes, there was only Coinbase, and in Germany we had an exchange, but it was very tricky to get it. There weren't that many wallets. Compared to today, it's more convenient for sure. On the other hand, like, regulation was a little bit less, so it was also good to start fast, whereas today you have to verify everywhere, which is not so nice for the experience. But that's absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, there was by far less to trustworthy resources, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I also find it very interesting that separation that you make between cryptocurrencies in general and Bitcoin. And I actually wanted to have your opinion about that, because, you know, Bitcoin receives a lot of criticism for the proof of work algorithm, because some people would say that it's not energy efficient, that it's bad for the environment and so on and so forth. And it's also very often compared to other blockchains that are more recent, like Ethereum or even Solana, that allow faster transactions, lower fees, and generally more possibilities with, for example, more sophisticated smart contracts. So, don't you think that the newest blockchains and their tokens would eventually outperform Bitcoin and make it outdated somehow?
Great question, Stella. I believe it's not that easy to to actually explain all that, but I'll try my best to do it anyway. So, first of all, I think you want to understand, you know, what Bitcoin really is and why it needs a blockchain, right? And Bitcoin is not competing, or let's say crypto, DeFi, Ethereum, altcoins are not competing with Bitcoin. Bitcoin, its primary use, at least in my opinion, is really to establish a global settlement layer for money and have it in a way that is fully decentralized, unstoppable, permissionless, borderless, but also unconfiscatable, and for the users to be controlled by users and not any central or any individual entity. So that is the main purpose. And of course, the detailed properties are that Bitcoin is the hardest money that the world has ever, or humanity has ever seen. Hard means hard to produce, right? So the reference of hard money or easy money, it's about the quality and the effort it takes to create more of that money. And why is that important? Well, that is important because if it would not be hard to produce money, well, you could probably produce more of it. So Dogecoin, I think, is a good example, negative example, or like a different example of that. So, you know, is Dogecoin hard money or easy money? I would say it's easy money, because Dogecoin is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's 15 million new Dogecoins that is, you know, that are produced per 24 hour. And with Bitcoin, it's 21 million, right? That there will never be more than 21 million, roughly 6 million Bitcoins are lost. And that is what it is about. You can rely on the Bitcoin network that this is sound money. This is money that is hard to produce, and it will always stay that way. And this criterion is not the case for any of the other currencies, because they use different systems, they use a different technology, they have a different consensus mechanism, they have a different architecture, they may not be as decentralized the large portion of the altcoin or crypto, broader crypto market, is driven by companies. So there is, you know, a project and there is a development team, and they basically design the code, you know, with the purpose to, promise any kind of, you know, use case. May it be possible or not? In my opinion, for most of these things, it's actually clear from the beginning that something is heavily misunderstood, both by the team or the people who run that kind of crypto project, and also by the people who, you know, buy into it or think it's great. And that is actually the blockchain dilemma, right? So as soon as you have a fully decentralized systems, there will be trade-offs. There will be trade-offs because you cannot have it all at the same time. You cannot have security, speed, and decentralization all at the same time. This is just thermodynamics, basically. And I think this is what the market will learn at some point. And, you know, I might be wrong. I'm also not super technical. I tried my best to explain what I have learned over the time, but there are other people much better explaining this. Maybe one reference who is well worded and very eloquent on this topic is a guy called Tomo Strawla. Yeah, so basically, myself, I'm not even a technical expert on that matter. There are better people to listen to and learn about this. One I could recommend is a sir named Tomer Strawlight, and he's very eloquent and very well spoken, and you can learn a lot from listening to him. He's done a lot of content on that. But essentially, the fundamental issue is called blockchain trilemma. And that means that if you have a decentralized system, first of all, it's very hard to achieve full decentralization, and there might not even be full decentralization forever. In my personal opinion, Bitcoin is on the top. It's the most secure and the most decentralized. And a few factors that influence this level of security and decentralization are, for instance, the consensus mechanism, but also the requirements for the participants of the network, which is mining, users, so wallet users, right, and Bitcoin holders, but especially the nodes which validate the blockchain and make sure whether the right chain is, you know, continued and validated. And so here it gets interesting, because if you set the bar high for it's the master nodes, right, you have to buy in order to be a node validator, and that could lower the level of security and equally decentralization, because you exclude people from validating, and that is not a good consensus mechanism in my eyes, because then only rich people would be able to direct the development or even, you know, change the protocol at some point. And so this is what many expect with Ethereum to happen, or where many skeptics of Ethereum criticize or are afraid it might turn out negatively, that once you switch to proof of stake, it's a completely different model. It's a completely different architecture. And it could end up being less decentralized and less secure, because it's run by those with the most money, for instance, right? So this is generally, the debate. And so far, I think Bitcoin is the most secure and the most decentralized, because running a Bitcoin node, is quite easy. You get help by a great community. For instance, there's a movement called Plepnet, and those are a bunch of friends around the world, and they're dedicated to operate Bitcoin and Lightning nodes. And it costs you $100 or less to do that. And so, there's a big misunderstanding, I think, by people, and it's driven by influences, you know, from personal benefits. So, I mean, running a crypto asset is basically almost all the time, it is a so-called seigniorage scam, where the emitter of the token, receives value for the token on the promise. So it's a crowdfunding, right? You could call it crowdfunding, or, you know, many say unregulated securities. Personally, I don't really like that that stigma, because I don't believe in regulated securities either. But I do understand that, you know, it's the right of people to also call out when they feel the technicalities aren't thought through, and someone is issuing a token, although he actually knows it's never going to work. The promise is never going to happen, because it's never going to be decentralized, and only Bitcoin really is decentralized.
Okay, I see. I see. So it actually makes a lot of sense when you take it this way. So if I understand correctly, for you, what makes Bitcoin really special is the fact that it's the most decentralized cryptocurrency. Because as you said, most of the other currencies that we know are all there's always a founder right behind it. We always have the identity of the company. We can always, let's say, identify and link a cryptocurrency to a company. And this is not the case with Bitcoin, right? Because the creator, Satoshi Nakamoto, is completely unknown and has disappeared. So that makes Bitcoin the most decentralized. And then also it's the most rare because there's a finite amount of Bitcoin mined. So for these two reasons, Bitcoin is actually, in your opinion, the most, let's say, decentralized and how can I put it? The most interesting cryptocurrency. You don't see any other currency outperforming it.
Definitely, yeah. You could put it that way. I think interesting for me. You know, it's about preference also, right? I mean, what do you want? Mm-hmm. For me, the reason why I love Bitcoin is, I mean, when you understand how the banking system works and the central banking system works. That while you work hard on your job earning these euros or dollars, some other people, they don't work at all. They can press a button and, you know, a trillion new dollars is emitted and printed out of thin air. And so that means, you know, why do we play this game? Why do we pay tax? Why do we go to work when actually money could be just printed, right? And so this is an unfair and pretty corrupt system where some people get rich on the cost of the rest. Because when they print money, your money gets worthless, which takes from you the opportunity to save money. And it especially undermines the ability to even think long term. So that is a fundamental idea, which for me is the reason why I love Bitcoin, is that Bitcoin will be able to get people on a higher level of prosperity and just economic well-being because it will take this... sinister banking system out of power, and people will be able to save again, and that will turn. That is what many assume will basically kick off a new renaissance. Yeah, so the renaissance where was pretty prosperous for everyone. The gap between rich and poor was smaller compared to, you know, today's quadrillionaires, and there was a strong middle class, and that's because there's a gold standard where and nobody can print money out of there, so everyone has a fair, you know, a fair basis. But especially because it's more smart to not print money constantly and invest it in the market, but save money before you invest, because that prevents bad investments or mal investments, how the Austrian school of thought calls it, or Mises called it mal investments. So right now, you know, what many people criticize also in Malta, right, is, you know, the housing bubble perhaps, and like mindless development and all this corruption that people see, what is the root source from that? What is the root cause? The exploitation, right? And even war. So the war machinery is not financed with Bitcoin. It will never be financed with Bitcoin. It's financed with cheap money, with easy money, with credit, right? And so we say Bitcoin is money and everything else is credit. But for saving and a good sound money, it needs to be a hard asset. And Bitcoin is, in my eyes, the best money forever, for a long, long time. And that's why I think you really have to separate, like, what do you actually want? To me, Bitcoin is a revolution that allows people to free themselves from economic deprivation and oppression, whereas Ethereum and all the likes are, you know, in my eyes, very, very vague, not decentralized projects with a completely different approach. And I don't want to judge it, but I do want to say that, you know, you really want to make sure you understand Bitcoin first and before you form an opinion on the others. But I do allow people their own opinion, and I do love the free market, which includes systems to fight against misinformation and, you know, false promises and false marketing. And I think this is where the center of the debate, you know, Bitcoin versus Ethereum really lies. It's about how you actually promise and execute. So Ethereum, to my knowledge, there has been a pre-mine of 70%. Although, you know, Ethereum, you could argue, you know, that the Satoshi coins, if they will ever be revealed, it could be seen kind of like a pre-mine. But at least the founder doesn't exist, right? So it's fully decentralized. There's no founder. Mm-hmm, there's no incentive, no special interest group. Ethereum, on the other hand, you know, Vitalik, there's a very huge top-down impact. And we will see how that plays out. You know, besides the fact that there has been many, many more issues than compared to Bitcoin, you know, from lost funds. And so many criticize that, right? So the DeFi crypto space, mm-hmm. it's really about pump and dumps. It's short-term thinking. People want to get rich quick, but it's basically a casino. And on top of that, it's very insecure. A lot of funds get stolen all the time. Bitcoin is really simple. That's why it's, I think, so unattractive to many, because everyone expects like something fast and, you know, fancy and cool and new and fresh and decentralized. I want to be the first, because people think they missed the boat with Bitcoin, which is not true at all. It's still super early, but it's more boring. Yeah, it's like this boring old vehicle where you can't do anything except for savings. Yeah, so it's a very conservative or seemingly boring thing, which I don't believe, because I think it's the most fascinating thing that's going on. It's a decentralized community and a decentralized protocol that nobody can stop. And, you know, just learn about it, right? And before you judge it or think you know better, you probably don't know better. That's for sure. Most people that think they know better than Bitcoin are humbled at some point and come back and realize, okay, I didn't really got it right. Right. And so Bitcoin is fascinating technology, a fascinating discovery, but be humble that this phenomenon, really, it's probably more complex than you think. If you think you know Bitcoin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love your passion when you talk about Bitcoin. It's very contagious. I wonder what you think about the fact that Bitcoin gets often referred to as digital gold, because you're talking about that rarity that makes it very special. But there's also another fact. There's also another reason why it's often referred as this digital gold, is because, you know, it's not very. It has proven itself to be one of the most performing assets to store value, but because of its volatility, doesn't really allow to be a great unit of account. For a minute of exchange, the transaction fees might be a substantial obstacle, but yeah, basically for that store of value function, it's very often compared to digital gold. What do you think about that?
Well, I do believe it is not entirely wrong. I don't believe it does full justice to what Bitcoin is either, but it's a good start. And I think I would say Bitcoin and just like that, Dogecoin, they're good teachers for people. So I think what people have to realize is that they are being played. When money is printed and credit expanded and government GDP to debt ratio is going through the roof, that means the supply of a good, the supply of the money is increased. Is that good or bad? You could think, well, more money, great, fantastic. But the reality is that there's a price equals value, right? So to make it simple, maybe it's a bit abstract now, but money is just a good. So historically, you're right, it has been shells, it has been spices. In fact, the word salary is a reference to salt, which is a great money, because you know, you can weigh the grams and like pay the sailors in salt. And back then, it was hard to produce salt. It was a rare thing, but important for the brain, and so it was used as money, right? And so there have been many different money. So it's really just a good like any other. That people like to use as a store of value, medium of exchange, and unit of account, as you said. Now, you know, what is good money, what is bad money? I talked about it earlier that I believe when people use it as a store of value, they want to be sure that the supply is low. Because if that is not the case, if they cannot rely on that, somebody could just, you know, produce more of it, right? And the moment that happens, your saving balance is gone. It's a rug pull, right? It's like you're back. It's like your money is not there anymore. Sorry, there was hyperinflation, and so this happens historically. In the past 25 years, it happened over 20 times. So Argentina, for example, is suffering as right now in 2022. Still, Venezuela is still suffering from this. Mm-hmm. Many places in the world, and basically, the economically speaking, the problem is when the debt of a nation is too high that the economic power does not suffice anymore to serve the interest of the debt of the government. Well, how are you gonna pay back, right? If your cash flow, if your business can't pay the debt, well, you're in a pretty damn, it's like in this simulations, right? it's a damned situation. You basically have game over. Yeah. So in SimCity, for example, which I liked playing when I was young, there's this threshold, and if your debt goes too high, you will never be able to get enough tax revenue to pay the debt, right? And so this is what's going on in the world. It's in the stage of game over, because they will not be able to pay it back anymore. And so there's a specific ratio of, I think, 130% or something, where it's because the economic power can't be more, you know, than 5 or 10% maximum GDP growth. And that's pretty optimistic, especially the more the government grows, the worse the economy usually gets. The more influence the government has on the economy, the worse it gets, because it's socialism, it's planned economy. It never worked in the history. It will never work, because people are way better off without influence and interventionism by planners. Planners are lazy, and they don't have an idea. They're not creative. They're not really industrious. They really just want their position of power and, you know, have a nice day, basically. So that just doesn't work well together. And so I think this is fundamentally what people are realizing. Dogecoin, another great teacher in my eyes, because Dogecoin are produced, 15 million new ones per day. And so it's not a good money, right? Because it's like it will just decrease in value over time. And it's now at the bottom again, after it was hyped by, certain prominent individuals. And I think this is what people have to realize: what is good money and what is bad money. And I totally agree that Bitcoin is the hardest asset, right? So, and that's actually, maybe to touch quickly on the environmental or energy use. Well, of course, it takes energy, because that is the trick Bitcoin applies to make sure a digital item, right, which is digitally reproducible infinitely, usually like any other MP3 or, picture or text online. Well, there is no limit to its production, because you can just right click, copy and paste. And so digital items usually are not scarce, quite the opposite, right? They're abundant and yes, infinitely producible. But Bitcoin, what it does now, it creates these, the coins, through actual physical real world energy consumption, which turns real world energy into something valuable in the digital world. And that is the trick it uses in order to create the hardest asset ever. Now, many people criticize that, but in reality, if you actually look at the data, you will realize it's still minuscule. Like the energy consumption of Bitcoin is nothing compared to the amount of energy that is wasted. Our current level of energy production and distribution is pretty poor. It's not very efficient. It's a huge amount of energy that gets wasted. Now Bitcoin comes in, you put a Bitcoin mining facility next to a, gas turbine or something. And because energy consumption is volatile too, right? And energy in general is very hard to distribute. Well, put the Bitcoin miner there and take that excess energy and turn it into something valuable. Well, pretty good, I would say. And so exactly, that is not an environmental problem in my eyes. On top of that, I think, many believe that it's a very, closed mindset to say, oh, we should reduce energy. I think we should expand our use of energy as humanity. However, of course, in harmony with nature and, not polluting everyone and having safe and clean energy, of course. But ultimately, Bitcoin, many believe, will actually be a key to more energy access, because the demand for energy will increase with Bitcoin's use. And if that happens, if that demand increases, then also the incentive to invent new technologies to be more efficient with energy will increase. So that's the
Exactly. I'm very happy that you tackled this energy question, because it's quite controversial. So it's nice to have your opinion about that. You seem to be quite pessimistic about the current financial system, which is centralized. Do you think that DeFi would at some point take over the system? And if yes, when do you expect this to happen? And also, do you think this is something that we should wish for?
Yeah, well, again, I think the idea is nice, but the reality, in my humble personal opinion, is Bitcoin is DeFi. It's truly decentralized finance. It's truly decentralized money. And the so-called DeFi or crypto space is actually CeFi. It's actually centralized finance, because if you look at what's happening, the competition between Solana and Ethereum and Phantom Protocol or any of those, in my opinion, it is basically getting more and more centralized. Why? Because again, of the blockchain dilemma that you cannot have, unfortunately, on layer one, you cannot have security, speed, and decentralization at the same time. So you will have to make trade-offs. And in order to increase the product in DeFi, quote unquote, the approach so far has been to centralize more. So phantom protocol, well, where are the funds? Well, they're in the Seychelles, in the server, right, on the Seychelles. So if something goes wrong, good luck finding your money there. Not going to happen to Bitcoin. Your coins, your keys, your coins. And so, yeah, well, I would like to see, I do appreciate the idea and the experiment, but yeah, if people would be fully honest, I would say many would realize that they're being played and maybe it's not gonna work out so well ultimately, but I could also be completely wrong, you know, and DeFi is, you know, wonderful and it's gonna outcompete the banks. I'm definitely curious to see that. And I would never argue for regulation to crack down on it because I'm really against regulation. But I at the same time, I do advocate for fairness and transparency and honest marketing. And that's where I have a bit of a doubt that, you know, it's really happening also well. But yet again, you know, I think it's good that people just, you know, never, you know, I mean, this is no financial advice, by the way, but like, you know, I think it's absolutely fascinating what's going on. That so far I would go. Yeah.
Okay. I see. And another topic that I wanted to.
I mean, look. Let me add one more point to this. Okay. So I'm really excited about DeFi on Bitcoin. So there's this community called Plepnet, and all they do all day long is installing Bitcoin nodes and Lightning nodes, right? And so what you talked earlier, I think, also was one point that I didn't answer yet. Bitcoin is criticized for being so expensive, right, on chain. So first of all, Ethereum criticized Bitcoin's network fees back in 2017, which when indeed they were, I think the maximum we ever had, in my opinion, was $40. Around $40 was the highest fee ever paid for a Bitcoin transaction. And right now, a gas fee on Ethereum is much, much higher than that. And for a long period, for like 2 years, whereas Bitcoin has shown that it can innovate on the protocol level. There are innovations that came in batching and SegWit and others. But more importantly, again, it's the wrong question. It's the wrong idea. The truth is layer one will never be a fast application layer. It will be a dump network. It has to be. It has to be simple because otherwise it is at risk to being co-opted or attacked. And so it needs to be strong and secure and slow because of the blockchain dilemma, right? And so I think that's the wrong question. But the funny thing is, the really funny part is that Ethereum has low fees. Bitcoin has very low fees right now. I mean, you can send on-chain fees quite cheaply, right? But what I'm excited really about is layer two, right? So the Lightning Network coming in, which again is truly decentralized. It truly follows the ethos of Bitcoin, permissionless. It's adding quite a bit of privacy to the use. It's low to no fees. Anyone can run a Lightning node and say, hey, look, I do this as a service for free because I love open source. I think money should not be a business model for banks and governments to steal from people. It should serve humanity. And so I'm going to operate a Lightning node with zero fees, right? This can always happen, will always happen. It's not really a business model. Bitcoin is a community project from dedicated individuals that love freedom, that love prosperity for everyone, and that love Bitcoin for the fact that it's the best tool ever to change and make the world more beautiful, because what really hinders us from growing and advancing is the banking system that keeps people poor and creates more debt for everyone. And that's no really good economic policy or way forward.
I understand your point. And actually, when you talk about, so what I call DeFi, but you call CeFi, because for you, it's still kind of centralized. What I meant is, do you think that at some point we will completely be able to live without this banking system that you seem very pessimistic about? Do you think that do you see a world in 10 or 20 years from now where people will no longer use banks or any kind of, anything similar to what we have now, this very centralized system, to go towards, I don't know, protocols like, I don't know, Aave or all those DeFi protocols that we have right now?
Yeah, great question. I definitely see a world without banks. On the other hand, I think that banks are market participants, and banks can be good. They don't necessarily have to be bad. The question is how they operate. So if banks are operated under a fiat standard, so the current monetary system we're using, I think banks are not as good as they could be. But you know, personally, I don't like to run around with my Bitcoin wallet all the time. It's very difficult to store Bitcoin at home securely. It's not easy, and it's not really everyone's preference. It's just like that. So I do think there is a role for someone like a bank to just help and educate and take care of take custody of someone's money. But you know, this is for everyone's personal choice. The important thing is that Bitcoin stays decentralized, stays secure, and for that to happen, I think it's very important that users avoid custodians, and this is crucial for Bitcoin to succeed, that individuals hold Bitcoin in a self-sovereign manner, that they control the keys and no one else. And I do believe also that I'm very excited for that. When something bad, let's say, you know, a systemic crisis appears, what will happen to your Bitcoins on Nexo, on Coinbase, on Kraken, on Bitstamp, on Binance, mm-hmm. all these things. So they control the coins, and ultimately there's a server room somewhere. They are not decentralized. So they control millions of coins. And at some point, knock, knock, you know, someone powerful with guns could come. I mean, this is a question of game theory, right? And maybe economic theory. But we've seen this in history over and over again, that the government at some point likes to take the money off people in order to overcome an economic crisis that they produce, right? And that you don't have to be blamed for. But, you know, it's, of course, we are humans and we do what's best for us. And in the case of the government, they like to take people's money. And so I think technically it's actually inevitable that we will, that Bitcoin will succeed, simply because it's better money and simply because you cannot stop it. And it's, as long as that is the case, and I don't see anything that would change that, scenario, so far at least, so Bitcoin will stay unstoppable for the foreseeable future. That means there is competition. There's competition between monetary assets, and historically Bitcoin has had a bigger or, you know, higher valuation in the future. So what's a good prediction is, I don't know when or what or which price, but usually, historically, the future Bitcoin price is higher than the one in the past. And it's going to continue to be like that because, you know, people are looking for alternatives when the stock market is maybe volatile and maybe, you know, overblown, many believe. Many believe. So just like the housing market could be a little bit overdeveloped due to the fact that the money is printed out of thin air and then, you know, drawn towards these specific markets that allow for better store value. But actually, it's not supposed to be that money. That money is supposed to be in Bitcoin because it's hard money, it's good money, it's right money, it's sound money, not like the fiat scam funny money. And so, yeah, I think Bitcoin is eating the world asset class after asset class. It's managed to outgrow the biggest, largest companies such as Amazon and Google, and it will continue to grow in market capitalization. It will take over silver. It took over silver, I believe, and it will take over gold. And once that's there, I think it's a huge market signal. Of course, we have to break that. Of course, you know, there are enemies of Bitcoin, those who have too much skin in the game on the old system, or they are banked on the old system. They don't want the young generation to stand up and wake up and protect their wealth themselves. They don't like that. They want people to give the money to the banks so they can control it and they can rule and they can decide. But Bitcoin is a grassroots movement. And so, yeah, economically speaking, I believe Bitcoin is sound money. And because of that, everyone will at some point just realize, hey, look, my neighbor has Bitcoin and I have the digital currency from the government that they can just, you know, turn off my account when I say the wrong thing or have the lower score on Facebook mm-hmm. or whatnot, or, you know, spent the wrong way. And plus, it's just losing value all the time. I mean, now central banks have agreed that, you know, the official inflation rate is above 5%. I mean, can you believe it? Many Austrians have criticized it for many years, and it's official now. Get your money out of the bank. I think it's risky. It's not a good store of value anymore. It has never been, actually. And Bitcoin is the best performing asset, as you say. And as long as it's free and in competition, there is nothing like it. There is nothing to compete anymore with it. Not gold, no other currency. And if that's true, I don't see why Bitcoin's success would be stifled at any point. At just the opposite. I mean, the innovation that's going on, the growth in the industry that's going on, is just showing. Now we're at, you know, we have a whole country accepting Bitcoin in El Salvador, and so there's, you know, the island of Tonga, very proactive, and Arizona, a bill has been proposed, and Miami, the mayor is very bullish. And so, you know, even on a nation level now, I think governments realize, okay, they can't really stop it, they can't control it. Well, maybe it's better to join them and just accept the fact that Bitcoin is changing the world.
Wow, so there are so many things I'd like to go back to on what you said. So the first thing would be, it's actually very interesting to have your opinion about it, and you saying that you see that we're still at the beginning of Bitcoin. You also said it at the beginning of the interview, but now is that you're really, really bullish for the future, when nowadays we hear a lot, as you also said, that, you know, it's maybe a bit too late to be interested in Bitcoin. Maybe we should look at the other cryptocurrencies and so on and so forth. So for you, it's really just the beginning still, right? Do you think we're still earlier?
Absolutely.
Do you think we are at the adoption?
Yeah, good point. Just to correct one detail here, I suggest to not look into crypto or DeFi before you feel like you really understood Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I think Bitcoin, you know, is very important, and it's very tricky, and it takes a couple of different steps to understand. You want to learn a little bit about economics, you want to learn about technology, you want to learn about, yeah, what makes Bitcoin Bitcoin, and the historic, you know, evidence that shows, you know, what sound money can do for us, and all that. So it's fascinating. There are great resources. First of all, bitcoinnews.com, of course, again, feel free to join us on our mission to spread the wonderful knowledge about Bitcoin and observe together what's going on. But yeah, indeed, I think it's not too early. It's not too late. It's very early, because, I mean, it's just 10, 13 years now. It's, you know, it's really not that old. And I mean, if you go around and ask people, you know, have you heard of Bitcoin? I think many people, young people especially, have heard. But can you compare it to, say, like, have you heard of WhatsApp? Well, I mean, how many people use WhatsApp, right? Everyone uses WhatsApp every single day, right? And so, or Amazon, right? Or any other thing, like, have you heard of cars? Yeah, cars exist, right? So we know them. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, we have flying cars and soon, you know, autonomous cars. But Bitcoin, seriously? I mean, sure, you know, a few people think, you know, have it and use it, but I don't think it's anywhere close, you know, a broader acceptance yet. So it's the first country that has, you know, officially made a legal tender. This could, again, be changed or, you know, attacked in some ways. You know, it could be revoked. But, you know, just considering that no official country has touched it yet, and it's like, you know, people don't get it, I think it shows how early it is. And I think the economists, everyone has, you know, nobody can see the future. That's what you learn when you start learning about the Austrian school. They are very honest, intellectually honest about economic models. They can fail because the world is chaotic and there are unforeseen events that no economist can ever model or program or foresee. Yeah. So I don't know the future, but you know, just based on the fundamental thesis of Bitcoin, what can happen is, yeah, it will just eat up other asset classes as a store of value, and yeah, if that continues, I think many believe that, you know, it could be at tens of millions, you know, compared to dollar. I think it's, again, you know, Satoshi once said in an email, maybe it's smart to just try out a little bit, you know, buy a little bit of Bitcoin, use it, and in case it catches on, right? And I think that's still valid today, that it's, you know, if you're not sure, well, I mean, try it, you know. And like, I also like to use Bitcoin in El Salvador. I can use it. I can use the Lightning Network to pay in El Salvador at Starbucks, McDonald's, you know, all the big chains there. So, I mean, look, I mean, it works now. And yeah, I think it's a great time. It's probably the best time right now to learn about Bitcoin. It's always a great time. The best time was yesterday or last year, of course, but, you know, unfortunately we can't turn back time.
Yeah, unfortunately, as you say. And the second thing on which I wanted to go back to regarding what you said, and you revoked it again, is when you talked about Salvador adopting Bitcoin as a legal tender. So knowing that you're a digital nomad, I assume that you went there, and I wanted to know, how did it feel? How was it? I can't picture a country where you can pay Bitcoin everywhere. It's still quite far from where we are right now, here, at least in Europe.
Yeah, you know, we tried to help foster merchant adoption in Malta, and I think we managed like a couple bars, so the Down the Rabbit Hole bar in Malta, as well as Hole in the Wall bar, and a few others. I think at some point Novi Burger in Gzira, and a few other shops. Yeah, there's actually, I think, the diamond shop in Porto Maso, the jewelry is still accepting it for larger payments. So, you know, merchant adoption is beautiful because you actually not just, you know, hold Bitcoin, but you actually use it, right? And many people say, oh yeah, you know, Bitcoin is digital gold. You should not spend it. That is true. I mean, you're not incentivized to spend Bitcoin. Every time you spend Bitcoin, you may not be able to buy it back at a lower or similar price, but rather at a higher or much, much, much higher price. And you would regret because your coffee that you spend $10 is suddenly $100. So I bought coffees in Prague at the conference, you know, for $3, and it's like $60 or whatever now, right? So, but you know, on the other hand, I don't believe that you should not use Bitcoin because maybe you die tomorrow. What you're gonna do then, right? Like, I also believe that it's great. It needs to happen that you spend Bitcoin. And so visiting El Salvador was really, really jaw dropping. It's absolutely fascinating to see Bitcoin being used in real life and in the real world. And interestingly, so from my personal experience, what happened there is that, of course, you know, it's a bit difficult that for many people. I mean, it's not true that, you know, all over Salvador you can pay with Bitcoin. But that's also, I think, not it was never really the approach by the government. It was like, okay, look, we do the legal tender. By the way, they also made US dollar legal tender in the same law. And so, you know, they knew, okay, it's not going to happen that, you know, any small shop there on the street will use Bitcoin, but that also isn't the purpose. But the experience there goes so far that, you know, many of these large corporate chains, so there's like Taco Bell and McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all these big companies, they of course have it easy because they have an IT department and they roll it out. They're very compliant also, right? And that was an absolutely amazing experience. Just go to McDonald's, you know, take out your Lightning wallet off the pocket, go to the terminal, you get your Big Mac and you check out, right? And so, I mean, of course, people criticize, oh yeah, you shouldn't go to McDonald's, you know, go eat a local restaurant. Indeed, many local restaurants, you have the exact same experience. But, you know, McDonald's like this big brand, so it's kind of fun and absolutely amazing. It's happening. It's possible. It's the actual future. Yeah, I really felt like in the future. And I think not many people are aware of these implications. It means that merchants learn Bitcoin. It means that if banking rails break down, they will be accepting payments in Bitcoin without any issues. They will be able to have a circular economy. They are informed. They are ahead of the curve big time. The economy will just boom because capital is attracted, hopefully. And yeah, the individual experience or the individual learning curve is pushed forward. And I think this is the service that I think is positive. That somehow the government managed to do there to the people, you know, besides, you know, things that you may not think are right, or, you know, some other stories you hear here and there. But for me, as a Bitcoin user going there, absolutely fascinating development. And I can only recommend someone who's interested in technology or a Bitcoin user or crypto enthusiast. Well, you should definitely try set up a Lightning wallet and fund it and go to El Salvador and give a little bit back to the people there.
Yeah, actually, I would love to do that. I would really love to do that. And I think it's really great that you have this
type of digital nomad country
that allows you to have these kinds of experiences. Sorry, you wanted to say something?
Friendly people. I felt safe all the time. I did not feel in danger at any point. Of course, it's a, you know, Latin American startup nation. You may, if you've never been to Latin America, you may be up for a little adventure, but they have office buildings there. You know, they have, you know, private taxis, whatever you like. They have hotels there that are decent. And so the nature is fascinating and beautiful. They have beautiful volcanoes and beautiful nature, a wonderful surf beach. Lovely people, and yeah, you can pay with Bitcoin everywhere. So it's a must visit for anyone in the space.
Yeah, I can imagine. Actually, I'm very curious about your digital nomadic life. I'm curious to know how your life was before and what led you to change it so radically. And also, how did crypto contribute to this type of, if it has contributed at all?
Yeah, Bitcoin was good for me, and I think a little bit would be good for you too. Indeed, I think my life was horrible before I started traveling, to be honest. It might not be, you know, my personal experience might be, you know, vastly different to someone else, like someone who does not, who just loves home. Well, you know, that's fine. I'm someone who loves adventure, who loves exploring, who fell in love with traveling. It's definitely possible. There's definitely certain tricks, you know, and maybe some downsides. But ultimately, I really don't regret having visited 50 countries by now and learning what, you know, people think and do and how other cultures really tick and how they are struggling in their own way. But then at the end of the day, you know, they're the exact same people. They're good people. Most people are good in my experience. There are a few, you know, people that want to learn a little bit more and to become better. I think it's beautiful that it's possible nowadays with technology and the world getting closer together. We can learn from each other. We can find opportunities, of course. It might be that your home country is actually not serving you well anymore, and it might not be to your taste anymore. Maybe your government is actually really mean to you, whereas your neighbor country is much better, right? So stay dynamic. I think humans have always been nomadic and not as much settling than we believe. We're grown up in the world. Oh yeah, you have a German passport or a French passport, a Belgian passport. Well, you're supposed to work and live and study in Belgium, right? No, that's not the case. You're a human, first of all. You don't belong to a government. That's a fiction, right? Mm-hmm. That's a very poor illusion. The truth is, you can go where you're treated best. You can explore the world. You can find a new home. Ultimately, home is, you know, where you are with your people, with your community, with your family. But you can decide where that is, and you may realize, hey, the grass is much greener elsewhere, and you know, you may are more like a beach person, or you really love the ocean and diving, or you really love hiking. And if you live somewhere flat, yeah, probably it's better to go to Switzerland. And so El Salvador is great for hiking and beautiful. And a lot of people, yeah, I think take this opportunity. And I personally really don't regret traveling a lot.
Amazing. That's beautiful. I really love your vision. And would you say that this nomadic lifestyle is completely accessible to anyone? And would that be something that you would like to see more people having this kind of lifestyle? Because right now it's, you know, with the remote working and so on, we're starting to be a bit more flexible, I feel, with location and traveling. But I still feel that it's something very rare. Would you like to see this happening more? And what kind of advice would you give someone who would like to adopt this lifestyle?
Good question. Interesting question. So I think if you feel like in your heart that you're not happy anymore where you are, well, you know, pack your stuff, travel as light as possible. Don't look back. You know, the world is exciting and beautiful, and you're up, you know, for a beautiful adventure, and it's so rewarding. And just like in, you know, a student, you know, exchange, or, you know, when you're older, any kind of work, remote work or international travel, really adds experience. Ultimately, it depends on you. I mean, if you're happy, don't change, right? But if you feel like you want to travel, well, do it. It's totally possible. And I wouldn't say it's a small trend. It's a trend that's developed for the past 10 years at least, and beyond. And it's picking up even more because, you know, people, I think, realize, okay, like, you know, I can actually contribute and add value to the economy, not just in a big company. I can grow, my own client base. I can be a participant in the global economy freely and independently to my own terms. And I think that's better. It's healthier. You should never lie to yourself, and you should never play a role for someone. You should be yourself. And I think this is something important that you learn to find yourself and find what matters to you. that's the first thing I recommend. And I think a good tip really for this kind of lifestyle is like the fun is outside of your comfort zone. So grow some self-esteem if you're struggling with that and just do it. You will definitely be rewarded. And at some point, if you feel like it's not suiting you anymore, it's too stressful, maybe you change, you change your lifestyle. There's no limit to, maybe you're more like, you like Singapore, or you like Bali, right? Or you like Malta, come to Malta. It's, pretty nice weather, except this year or last year, year round, right? So, and it's completely different people that you get to know how to deal with. And just like that, it's different in, Vietnam or other places. And I think for young people, it's good to see these opportunities that, you can add to the economy from any place in the world in case your business allows that. But again, I think there's no one size fits all. If you want to set up a business or a business network in some place or in your home country, well, who am I to judge? I mean, that's totally fair.
That's a very beautiful vision again. I'm a very big advocate for that. As I said, for me, it's so important to see other points of views, to get to know other people. And also it's very humbling to travel. But yeah, going back to crypto, I think it must also have been quite fun for you to observe the different perception of crypto all around the world. Except from El Salvador, which country would you say would be next to adopt crypto after Salvador? Did you see a country where it was more...
Yes, it's a good question.
Where you would see more open-mindedness from the population or more enthusiasm?
Yeah. Just to finish off the former question. So how is it traveling with Bitcoin, not crypto, by the way? Lightning and Bitcoin is my kind of tea, yeah, my sorry. Cup of tea. But it did save my life many times when my banks were blocking my accounts, freezing my accounts for, suspicious activity because I was withdrawing at a filthy new ATM somewhere in the last corner or something like that. So you always have to it's important to have backups. It's important to have a plan. It's important to learn a bit about that lifestyle. It's like, learning by mistake is good, but there are definitely a few tricks and you learn by experience. Now, Lightning has saved my life. I was in San Diego once and my card was frozen. And I couldn't move because it was Saturday or something. I couldn't reach them, couldn't do anything. I had no money, no cash anymore. And then there was, I looked on the map and looked for, shops, restaurants to pay with Lightning. And I figured, oh, wow, there's even a tostada, a really nice restaurant, a tostada shop, and also even a meetup. So I went there, paid with Lightning, everything smooth, and I wasn't hungry anymore. So that was great. And so like this, there are little stories. Yeah, where actually Bitcoin and Lightning is very valuable. There's a service called BitRefill that allows you to top up any kind of service in many different countries. So, your SIM card in El Salvador, Guatemala, or US, top it up with Lightning through BitRefill. And just like that, there are, a lot of tools and definitely a helpful tool. For me, the important thing about it is when I work, I want to save. When I work, I want to be sure that it adds up to my retirement, right? If I'm remote, maybe I could, work it to a government retirement fund or any other kind of, institutional vehicle. But I'm a skeptic. I think it's risky because they might invest it in a way that I don't really think is wise or smart in, real estate or stock market or any other thing. So I like to, take care of my retirement planning myself. And Bitcoin is, in my eyes, a wonderful technology to achieve that simply because of the fundamentals, right? And so that is really well, that goes really well together with a remote or digital or decentralized or traveling life design. So because you don't need, you don't need a bank account, you don't need, an address, you just save Bitcoin and that's it. You can also get paid by Bitcoin or by crypto. There are many jobs. There are many job platforms like bitcoinerjobs.com, for example. A lot of more companies now around that need talent and hiring, and they're up for remote work all the time because they know it's about execution and they're happy to pay you in Bitcoin, right? So earning Bitcoin is a fantastic experience as a freelancer or a small business or online business, whatever you do. To your next question, so which country am I optimistic? Well, I think a few years ago, people were debating, which country is probably predestined to go make the first move. Nobody expected it to be El Salvador, I believe. So, but people were aware of the fact that country level adoption might not happen in Western cultures really first, but actually depraved countries, such as, you know, countries in El Salvador where they're, you know, dependent on tourism, and just small economies where it's actually an option to for marketing, right? It attracting capital, attracting the risk friendly investors, and just create a vision together, right? And so people said, you know, Latin America is probably one of the best places, and it turned out to be the right prediction that I think this area is hot. I think El Salvador and its neighboring countries are maybe very, very good things like Ecuador, Paraguay, all these countries. I think there are a few more now. I think actually soon we will see something, the second mover. I heard some rumors, so let's hope, let's see, right? I would love Argentina to go on it, but you know, ultimately it doesn't matter. I mean, any country that really goes ahead and embraces Bitcoin, although it's not necessary, again, I want to make sure that people get this right? So the country is irrelevant. The government rules are irrelevant. The legal frameworks or legal tenders are completely irrelevant. And I believe the president of El Salvador understands that. I remember correct that he mentioned he explained Bitcoin in such a way that he understood, okay, so this, the government can only be there and like facilitate, but ultimately this is a decision by the individual, by the market. It's money that evolves naturally from the market rather than to be fiat money again. That is, you know, that is dictated on people. That should not be. But, you know, Bitcoin is free. So any culture, any community can just start. So with the Bitcoin Club Malta and Malta, for example, right, we're trying to say, hey, Bitcoin Island, right, in Europe. And I think it's all about seeing the benefits, understanding that it's inevitable. It will happen anyways, with or without you, but better be first because you might benefit vastly, right? And so I think what happened in El Salvador is exactly that individuals decided for themselves, hey, I think we can benefit from this. I think this is money for the people, by the people, and it's beautiful, and it allows us so much more creativity and freedom and you know, getting on and developing our communities, because it started at the Bitcoin beach in El Salvador, right? Like a small community at the beach where, you know, not that much tourism was going on, not that much economic prosperity is even possible. But now with this vision to say, hey, look, what's the fundamental problem is that we don't have good money. So we need better money. And so Bitcoin is this great money where we can send transactions between people without intermediaries on a protocol that's basically essentially for free with the Lightning Network. It's instant and free settlement. And I think this is where I'm looking at, like, not necessarily the countries, but actually, you know, where are the communities gathering? I think right now a lot of people are in Portugal. A lot of Bitcoiners in Europe are in Portugal. Okay. But, you know, it's really spontaneous. It's the spontaneous order. That's how the Austrian thinkers or economists define explain the free market, right? And so it's really can be anything. I think you know, wherever people gather or like and start using Bitcoin. Here in Mexico, there is a pretty big community now. Actually, tonight there is a meetup on the rooftop where you pay the burger with Bitcoin and it's 50% off, right? So it can happen anywhere, and just you will figure out sooner or later. Yeah.
All right. I see. Well, thank you so much for answering all of my questions. Is there anything that you would like to tell our auditors about the projects that you're working on right now, something that they might want to watch?
Thank you for the fantastic question, Stella. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. And anyone who wants to stay in touch, please follow us at bitcoinnews.com and on Twitter the same. If you're in Malta, come for a Bitcoin Club Malta meetup.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Leon. It was a pleasure meeting you. Truly fascinating, your interest for Bitcoin. I would say your passion, clearly, for Bitcoin, and your insights. You also dropped a lot of references that I'm going to look for after the interview. So yeah, thank you again.
The show notes are good for SEO, don't forget, right? So yeah, thank you, and buy Bitcoin, be free. This is no financial advice. See you next time.
All right. See you next time.
Bye-bye, ciao.
Thank you for listening to the Blockchain Practitioners podcast, and we hope you learned something useful and new about blockchain and digital currencies today. If you're involved in an interesting blockchain project and would like to talk about it in one of our episodes, feel free to reach out to us. Also, please like, comment, and share our content with everyone you think would be interested. If you'd like more information about this project, you can also visit our LinkedIn account and our Instagram as well as our websites.